What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today we have a special guest that isn't Eno Saris. No, it is Cade Povich of the Baltimore Orioles. Cade, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's been tough. Your schedule has changed a lot rapidly over the past week or so, but it's just great to just sit down and talk shop with you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to talk, and thanks for having me on.
So really all we're going to do here is just kind of talk about Cade's approach, his mentality, and really just talk shop a lot here. And first and foremost, I would love to just hear a little bit about your journey and just how you've changed as a pitcher a bit. That is, what were you throwing in high school? How did that change as you continue to grow from there?
Yeah, I mean, in high school, I would say when I was younger, honestly, probably a completely different pitcher in a lot of aspects. I mean, freshman and sophomore year, I started on the freshman team my freshman year. Sophomore year, I was on the JV team a little bit. Probably not even getting into the 70s. Growing up, I was more of a throw slow guy, but I could kind of try and put it in places and use that slow speed to get guys to not hit things hard. So
you sound like a high school lefty. Yep.
Yep. Typical high school lefty. Learn to change up, learned a curveball. And then when I was younger, I was trying to figure out something to throw inside. Cause you know, when you're like 11 and 12, you're scared to throw inside to kids. So found a YouTube video of Mariano Rivera explaining how he threw his cutter. So it was one of those things where just cutters whenever I wanted to go inside. And I mean, when you're freshman and sophomore in high school, I don't think many kids are seeing a cutter. So I think that was one thing. It was kind of toying with different movements of pitches with me throwing so slow. And then junior year, I was, I think, 72, 73. And finally really got into, I think that was around the time Driveline was really starting kind of their big upbringing, and as far as like using social media and kind of marketing their stuff. And so there was a group of us high schoolers in Nebraska that got together and went to this facility and kind of started that.
So I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I just want to remind everybody, I believe you'd be like 16 or so in like 2016 then. I mean, it's really easy for you. You're born in 2000. My gosh, what a gift. I just think about this for myself of like, I graduated high school in 2006 and I had no YouTube at the time. I think that's actually the year that YouTube then came into existence. So no Driveline to go to, no pitch grade. I actually had a ball that had dots on it. They said, this is how you throw a slider. Put your thumb here. And this, and I was like, this is wrong.
I've seen that.
And so you were, what you're saying to me is that you are the prototypical high school southpaw who's looking at a YouTube video of Mariano Rivera, goes to Driveline with your friends in high school. And this is really where things just completely changed for you.
Yeah. So we had a guy, he was a dad of a kid I know. I think my dad grew up with him as well. There was probably four or five of us. We'd go to a local facility in Nebraska, and he bought like the first, I think it was like Hacking the Kinetic Chain, and a bunch of plyos. And on that, they kind of list out kind of an off-season program, and we followed that. And I mean, I think a little bit of it was growing. I still have my ID, still for some reason says my height and weight from when I was 16 and I was 5'8", 110. So I think growing had a little bit to do with it as well. My senior year, I was probably 6'1", 140 something, but finished the summer, I think getting up to 86. So definitely a pretty big velo
jump. Yeah, definitely.
Had a good year. Didn't have a lot of offers necessarily as a soft tossing lefty. I had a late offer from Creighton, but I had already committed to South Mountain Community College in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I held on to that commitment, which I mean, I think the biggest thing with junior college is it's not like D1 where you have kind of a set amount of hours that you can max out at per week for practice and lifting and stuff. So it's basically, I mean, it also was one of those things where our coach was the athletic director. So he kind of set everything for us. He made sure all our classes were done by 12 so that at 1 we could start practice.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh.
So amazing. We practiced from like 1 to 6, get in the weight room. So that helped a lot. I was finally getting into the upper 80s. I think in season, one of my first starts, I think a White Sox scout had me at like 88, which for me, a couple of years ago, throwing 72, I was pumped about.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, then I had a really good year. And I was at the College World Series. Nebraska just got hired a new head coach, so they got a whole new staff. And I got a call from their recruiting coordinator, Coach Harvell, and asked me to come on a visit. And being from Nebraska, it was kind of a decision for me. But then, you know, COVID happened, and I think that might have been one of the best things for me. I hate to say it because obviously
it's always of that, but right, I mean, I can understand that being that opportunity for you to really jump into the organization and then just have this all this time to focus on that.
Yeah, I mean, we had a really good team in 2020. I thought we didn't start out great, but the foundation was there. But then COVID happened, and I had a facility in Nebraska, and I talked with Coach Bull, our head coach at Nebraska, on kind of what a game plan would be, because obviously no season, you don't really know what's going to happen. Still kind of trying to figure out if summer leagues are going to happen or not. So we kind of had me throw, I think, every Saturday live to batters. We'd have guys come in just to kind of simulate a season.
Right.
But I think the in-between time was almost like off-season-ish, to where I was lifting a lot more than I would in season.
Sure, yeah.
Like, instead of Wednesdays being just kind of like a light pen to get me ready for a start, I was honestly trying to reach back and see how hard I could throw.
Well, right. I mean, this is actually something that I've thought about a ton, is how the minors works in some ways can actually not be the best method for a lot of players.
Yeah,
because right, what you want to do is like, cool, you want to train as much as you can. You want to make yourself the best version of yourself, and sometimes that isn't doing all the things with the team, right? It's going every Saturday, throwing as much as you can, lifting, doing all the things you need just constantly. And it's something I've thought about a ton of, what is actually the best thing. We even see guys go off into, you know, away from the minors, go off to the MPB, go to KBO. It's a little different for them there. And it's not as, and it's a different cadence. And we've seen massive benefits from that. So I can absolutely understand how that regimen for you would be a perfect fit.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things when you speak about, like, minor leagues. I think everybody kind of works different. Like, I mean, some guys need to be in the weight room almost every day. Some guys, like, I mean, I've heard, obviously he's not a minor leaguer, but I've heard like Yamamoto is hardly ever in the weight room, but his mobility is through the roof. So I think once you get in the minor leagues, though, you don't want to try and be a guy that goes off and does his own thing. And so you listen to what they say, and sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes it's too much. And you know, that can harm guys sometimes.
Absolutely. Did you see some kind of a change of, as you went through the minors, and especially going to the majors, as far as specialized for you of what is best for you to work on specifically?
Yeah. I mean, with the Twins, when I was with the Twins, they did a really good job of kind of in between starts. We, like, on bullpen days especially, we'd really hammer down like mechanical stuff, whether that was doing core velo belt stuff, 3D strap, or some kind of front leg stability thing. They were really good at that. And then, I mean, at the time, too, being my first year, I was probably still 20 pounds lighter than I am now. The goal, rather than, because, like, nowadays, a lot of the work is, you know, we're going to put some weight on the bar, but we're going to track the speed of it because we want you to move fast. Their plan for me was really, hey, like you're pretty thin. I think you can move somewhat fast. We're just going to try and pile on the weight and see how much you can lift.
Sure.
And that was probably still the strongest I've ever been. And I really saw success with that. So what that kind of taught me, I've learned throughout the years that the communication aspect of it is probably the biggest. Like if you're a guy that needs to work out more, then say something and try and talk to them. And hopefully your strength coach or whoever in the system is working with you on that will cooperate with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes there might be pushback, but I feel like nowadays there's a lot of balance that can be found.
Yeah. Oh, completely. It's, oh my gosh. It's what bothers me a lot is I hear some organizations at times just have blanket statements, and it cannot be further from the truth of just, no, this guy should be throwing all these strikes over here. This guy should not be throwing these strikes over here. This, you know, it's unbelievable. It's actually my favorite part about baseball is that your goal is to throw this ball into an imaginary box, and every single person has a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
They're really, we try to do comps, but there really isn't a direct comp for everyone. And it's incredible. I want to go back to Nebraska with you and just that COVID season and really what was working for you at that time, as far as your arsenal goes and your mentality and what was your attack plan. And then take me from there to the minors.
Yeah. So like COVID was really just about throwing everything. And then going into Nebraska, like I had been more of I'd throw a four seam and then I'd have this big slow looping curveball and I could mix in a changeup. I had a slider. It was funny actually during COVID. The slider was like my biggest headache for me because I found a grip. I think I was watching a video of Blake Trinan explaining.
Oh my gosh! Everyone wants to throw the turbo slider. Exactly. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that thing's ridiculous. I mean, yeah. Are you talking about the hard slider that he would throw, right?
Yeah, the hard sweeper. I knew I could get to I guess 88, but. I was trying to be like, because my slider kind of wasn't anything great. I threw it kind of across the almost like a typical slider you would see back in the day, and then try and twist it like
you'd open up the like ultra supination ascension and release.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would kind of throw it just whenever. It wasn't really a necessary pitch for me, so I was trying to figure out something with that. Ended up just going like two seam grip, and I didn't throw a two seam at the time. Ended up going like two seam oriented grip and just like ripping it down the side.
Right. So essentially, I mean, this is kind of like the sweeper that they teach in like the New York sweeper, right? Yeah. So you have essentially the two seam grip like this, and you're going, I mean, some people go outside the side, but just going straight down like that, essentially using the index finger. Yeah.
I mean, my thought too on it wasn't even necessarily like getting, I mean, I think it's taught a lot to kind of like karate chop almost, but
yeah, I mean, that's actually how I threw my curve back in the day is I was told to karate chop straight down with my pinky down to my left ankle.
Right. So that honestly wasn't even like a mindset for me throwing it. It was just like, I'm just going to get on the side.
And throw
it, just pull down on it. And it was funny because I threw it once in live to a hitter and I had video of it and I was like, this is disgusting. And so I threw on Rap Soto and was throwing it thinking it was disgusting too. Cause I was like, well, it had to be moving the same. So I took a screenshot of the Rap Soto and sent it to a guy I'd worked with pitching wise, like throughout high school and a little bit into college. I'm like, I figured out this slider. Like, is this really good? And for some reason, that slider I was throwing in that bullpen was just a straight gyro slider. Like, I'm talking, it was almost exactly 0-0.
Yeah, was it really? Oh my gosh.
And it was funny. He's like, what are we going for? I'm like, He's like, that's pretty good, I think. And then I showed him the video from the live before of this thing just sweeping across the zone. He's like, okay, that one's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not a 0-0. That's a
yeah. But so I was working on that. It was great in lives. I was throwing it to lefties and righties, kind of in addition to the curveball and the changeup and the fastball. And then we get to summer ball. I'm throwing my first bullpen when I get there before our season starts. And I'm like, I got this new slider. It's disgusting. I can't wait to rip this thing. Out the door. Just gone.
Completely, right? I mean, you're probably overthinking it, coming around it too far, or just changing it. Always, right?
It got to the point where I'm like trying to do it. I think he was doing kind of the gyro thing again. Mm-hmm. And then another bullpen, I try and throw it again for some reason. I just like, I'm going to pull down on this one. And all of a sudden I just freaking yeet a two seam at the catcher. And I felt so bad.
Oh my God. Oh no.
Yeah. But then I kind of went back to my original one, cause I tried throwing it. When we came back to school after COVID, I tried going back to it. Still just wasn't getting what I wanted. So I kind of went back to the original, kind of just turn it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that would work. But yeah, then we get into minor leagues. After the draft, we had kind of a ramp up, because that was the first year the draft was at a weird time.
Yeah. I don't even remember when it was. It was just like, all right, we got to get this done, guys.
Yeah, it was – so it was weird because usually it's during regionals, during the college year. And now they do it where it's like a whole month later. So
yeah, they do the All-Star break now.
Yeah, and I was a guy that's like, I need to keep throwing for scouts, in front of scouts, because I'm not like – a locked in high pick or anything. So I kept throwing. Luckily that helped me a little bit once I got to camp, because my ramp up was quick. I wasn't really shut down. So I was able to finish, I think, the last 3 weeks of the season in low A. But yeah, I get to camp and I know my slider is not good. So I try going to where, instead of the two seam, I'm more hooking kind of the horseshoe.
Okay. So you're trying to go kind of underneath instead of at the top? Are you talking about actually at the bottom of it?
If you go back to like the two seam.
Yes.
Just go to the side on the horseshoe. So like my middle finger, yeah. So I'm trying to throw it like that and I'm ripping it. I'm thinking I'm just throwing it the same as I did in college, throwing alive. And I have my next day, I have, I guess, my post-live meeting with one of the pitching coordinators, and he's like, dude, your slider's pretty good. And nice. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't know that. And I really didn't know, honestly, too much about pitch metrics at the time. Like, we didn't have TrackMan data that we could look at at Nebraska. I mean, we had it at the stadium, but
it's kind of wild how much it changes everything.
Yeah.
The second you have it, it's been an enlightenment for me too, of just saying, oh, cool. This is what extension is, and induced vertical break and height adjusted VAA, all of these different things just massively change how we understand the impact of a pitch. And by the way, you even mentioned like, oh yeah, I had video of this and that. I'm like, I literally don't have a single video of me pitching, and I hate this. To no degree. It's all I wanted, just get a grasp of what we're throwing.
Right.
And you kids have it so easy these days. Okay. No, I'm really happy that you found that slider finally. And tell me more about this conversation with your pitching coach or pitching coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, and so we just kind of stuck with it, kept throwing it. And we would make some tweaks in like first time throwing on Edgertronic and stuff like that. So we made some tweaks to it, and it's been really good, like in the minors, especially with those baseballs. I've been able to get like 20 some sweep on it.
Right. So say that. So I want to make sure that's very clear. The baseball is different in the minors.
Oh, completely. It's like, I would say high school, like
The super seam.
over exaggeration, but seams are like here.
They called it super seam. That's at least what it was. It
Yes,
was the
they're insane.
best.
They're insane. Yeah, it's funny because I was talking with one of the guys. We have a group that I worked out with back home. It's like Aaron Bummer, Jake Myers, and one of the guys there, Kyle Kubot, who kind of helps. He brings in like the TrackMan stuff and helps us with pitching. He was talking about like it's funny because some high school kids that he works with will come in, and they'll be like, "I carried my vertical break was almost 30."
Great. Here's a
For this
baseball. Try this.
high,
Yeah.
I'm sure. But
It's like
yeah,
Spider
it's
Attack, essentially, for high schoolers, guys. I mean, I
exactly.
can't express this enough. There would also be games that I would get a different baseball or so, and I'd be so excited that I wouldn't get like the major league flat seam pitch, a ball. I would just get this massive thing. My curveball would just be like, this is the
Exactly.
easiest thing ever. So sorry, yeah, continue.
Yeah, so high school, I'd say like we'll say here,
Right.
college is like here,
Yeah,
and
it's
then
like an inch and a half an inch, and then like a couple millimeters or whatever. Yeah.
I think honestly the jump from a college ball to a minor league ball isn't that crazy. Like I think the biggest jump is the minor league ball to a major league ball.
Sure. I mean, that's so ridiculous. Like,
Yeah,
cool,
just
we prepare these guys in this way, and then let's just change it completely.
that's honestly the one thing I never understood about the minor leagues. Like
Oh my gosh.
you're trying to look at projections of guys to
Yeah,
see
trying
if,
to train them.
yeah, because I mean how do you develop a guy? How do you develop a pitch with a guy when, oh, okay, we're gonna throw this slider with this grip and we're gonna throw it like this. It's got this movement. But then you put a major league ball on it, like the leather's different, the seams are completely different. So I mean, like I was saying, I could sweep it to 20 almost, and with a minor league ball, and now it's probably like 8 to 12. Yesterday, I tried to go back door to judge, and
Oh yeah, that was, I mean, so it goes, you know.
usually those backdoor ones for me get like 4 to 8 sweep. That one decided for some reason to have 15, which I don't think I've done all year. So,
Right.
but
There is, yeah, I do want to ask then, really, your MLB debut. I'm just going to say it's the ball difference. And it's actually kind of funny. I often say, like, guys, every MLB debut, the pitcher, you cannot expect them to do well in this. Paul Skenes had a terrible one. We saw Chase Petty yesterday, and we know he's much better than that. But yeah, you had a rough one against Toronto for obvious reasons. I mean, there's just 20 million things. And then in Atlanta, sorry, not in Atlanta, hosting Atlanta in Camden, you had a phenomenal game. And would you say part of that is adjustment to the ball? Is a part of it to jitters? I mean, I'm kind of curious what your thoughts were the second you got that major league ball and how that felt.
Yeah, I think part of it was jitters. I mean, so we use major league balls in AAA.
Okay.
So they at least keep that a little consistent. I thought it made sense. So when I was with the Twins, I don't remember what that I never got to double. I wasn't in double A with them. I was in when I got traded, I was in high A for 2 weeks before they called me up to double A with Baltimore. But whatever league it is that the Twins double A is, I know they, or at least at the time in 22, they used major league balls in double A. So it was at least like, okay, low A and high A are using minor league balls. Like they're obviously further from the big league. So I guess that's a little okay. Double A, you can switch to major league balls because then, I mean, especially nowadays, like plenty of guys get called up from double A.
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, especially
So
those that want to avoid the PCL.
exactly. So it makes sense, I would say, for like if you're not gonna have all minor leagues use major league balls, then at least start in double A. Ours was triple A. So like when I got called up from double A to triple A, there was a little bit of an adjustment period just because like you're throwing one way because you're used to certain pitch metrics, and then you use a different ball, and you know, fastball's not carrying as much, slider's not sweeping as much, so you kind of have to make an adjustment movement wise to that. But I mean, when your movement changes, then obviously your starting point changes, so your command changes a little bit too. But as far as like the debut, I think that was a little bit of jitters for me.
It's everyone. How could you not? Yeah. Adrenaline is pumping. It's a different emotion. You're not used to it. Yeah. Walk us through that day a bit.
Yeah. I mean, so it was really cool. I mean, it was crazy going from Scranton to Canada to make my debut, but it was fun. I was able to get a lot of friends and family there. I think in my bullpen, I usually finish with two fastballs, and James McCann was catching me. I went to throw my last fastball, just about sailed it 3 feet over his head. And I was like, all right, let me get one more, just get back in the zone, like calm down. Same thing, said, screw it, let's go.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You got to look, guys, you got to see the basketball go through the hoop, you know?
Yeah, correct. But, hey, I ended up doing the same thing, I guess, for my first batter for strike three. And I guess I can kind of say my first major league strikeout was a little bit swordish on an elevated heater. But, yeah, I think after the first inning, I calmed down a little bit. It was kind of crazy for me. Like, I grew up watching Kershaw. I grew up watching the Dodgers. So, like, Justin Turner was on that Blue Jays team. And seeing him in the box was kind of incredible for me. Yeah. That was kind of like, I guess, that moment where I was like, okay, I'm really like thrown in here. But once I kind of got past that, I settled down and tried just pitching. Left my cutter a little over the plate to Vladdy. But then other than that, it was really a lot of like just balls that got wet and fell in front of
the outfield. I mean, that's going to happen a ton, and also trying to figure out those adjustments in the game. And between that and the Atlanta start, I mean, what was the focus in that, and how was it different in front of the home crowd in Camden?
Yeah, I mean, the home crowd at Camden is unbelievable. We have great fans, and the adjustment really was just kind of getting back to pitching. Like, the debut was over. I still had my home debut, but, you know, I had gotten the one out of the way. I had watched a whole week of baseball and got to see a lot of great guys on our staff, how they prepare. And, you know, that gave me confidence for my preparation going into the next start. I was facing my college teammate in Schwellenbach that day. So,
Nice. I didn't realize that. Mr. Crescendo, as we call him, because he's a Schwellenbach. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I always joke when I talk with people about it, because I'm like, yeah, he was my shortstop in college and was coming to close some games, and now he's just tearing it up. So.
Yeah, it's not fair, honestly. Like, he has like six pitches and he throws 96 now. It's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, but I mean, he, I think, I could be wrong. I think he got drafted as a pitcher out of high school and then went to Nebraska. And I mean, when he was coming back from Tommy John and working towards pitching again in 21, I mean, you could just stand, like, watch his bullpens and see that, okay, we have something here. And then you're back and rip 99 closing after playing shortstop all game. So, but yeah, I mean, sorry, I lost.
You're facing against Schwellenbach in the second start.
Yeah, so facing him, it was kind of, I think that like loosened it up a little bit, just because we had kind of talked about it all week together, I think that made it a little loose. We both threw pretty well that day. Had our college coach, our academic advisor, one of our athletic trainers as well. So I think that was a big, I think having that as my second start was really good for me, just to really level me out and not try and overhype things.
And what would you say, you know, in that start, and I really kind of want to focus on that one and the White Sox game, of course, And I know I we call them the Cry Sox. It's just sad, and we want them to be better, but they're still a major league club, and it's not like you can just go in there, throw whatever you want, and you're going to have success. You actually need to earn it completely. And I remember specifically in that one, your high fastball was just cruising past guys. I mean, really overwhelming them there. And are those the two starts that you kind of think about where it's, all right, this is me executing what I want to do. This is the version of Cade Povich I want to be every single time I go out there. And what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I look at those two a little bit. Yeah, like the White Sox are a major league team. I know they weren't the best last year, but at the same time, they have a whole minor league system. So if right. they thought all those guys were so terrible, they would bring up a bunch exactly. of other guys. And, you know, the Athletics in the past were a team that were looked on as not very good. And I got behind a lot of guys and walked a bunch of guys and then let a hot Brent Rooker get up and hit some home runs off me. And, so I think that game, honestly, looking back at like the Athletics game, really mm-hmm. set the tone. I don't think going into it, I necessarily overlooked them saying like, oh, it's the A's, like I don't have to do too much. But it really set a stone in me that like it could be a team that's 1 in 100 at the time you face them. Like they're still a major league team. They're
yeah, right.
some of the best of the best.
Right.
And yeah. that kind of helped a little bit with like my mentality throughout the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. A White Sox game was big for me. Just as far as an execution standpoint, like challenging fastballs inside mm-hmm. to righties. I think realizing that I got a decent amount of strikeouts and swing and miss on the changeup that day, and not necessarily a lot of them were great as far as height. But I think that kind of opened me up to realizing like if we're going to pound inside with fastballs, and it's okay to kind of change speed and eye level away. I know like in the past I've gotten hurt on changeups that have been maybe a little bit off the plate, but elevated thigh high.
Right.
But looking back on it, I'm throwing more fastballs over the middle of the plate, maybe up a little bit. But they're yep. not as challenging inside. So when you're changing kind of the directions that you're going and moving them back off the plate with fastballs in, it's going to be hard for them to go back over to get a changeup off the plate, even if it's a little bit more elevated. So that helped me. I would say what I really look at, though, for me is like my last two starts of last year. The game against Detroit, and then game at
Minnesota. In Minnesota, of course. Yeah, your former squad.
Yep. So those are, I would say, are the two I really look at. It was one of those things where it was one of those things where like I was efficient. I think against Detroit, I had seven strikeouts after
just 7 strikeouts, 89 pitches in 5 innings. Yep.
Yeah. So I the week before I just faced them at their place too. So it was like,
yeah, right. 89 pitches in 5 innings. Exactly.
Exact same stat line. It was maybe
one walk fewer, yeah. one more strikeout in the previous yeah. one. Yeah.
But that's what I look at just because it was like a lot of it, especially that first inning. It's like, here's my fastball and do what you can to it, and then
right.
break out a curveball, get weak contact, and mm-hmm. Kind of have a little bit of efficiency to it. And then in Minnesota, I mean, started out with the freaking like 12 pitch at bat, which
oh
was
my gosh, is that right? Is that this one? Oh man,
and
yeah,
but I reached back and got like 96 at bat. But yeah, I look at those two just. The aggressiveness, the end zone that I had and the efficiency I had with my pitches. Now I even look back at like this past Washington start will be one I look back at just because of the strike percentage and the way I commanded inside, the way I think I was like 20 for 24, 21 for 24, some on first pitch strikes that game. So
nice, yeah.
Understanding for me, like if I'm 0-2, 1-2, then I'm gonna have a lot of success, which that's the case for a lot of pitchers, I would say. But really attacking the zone is like the key aspect for me, getting ahead early and just continuing to attack.
Yeah, that was a game where you had 10 out of 25 called strikes on your four-seamer against the Nationals. And I do want to, I know there's so many, there's 20 million things I want to talk to, but this is such a fascinating interview, Cade. And I appreciate that you really have taken the time about the process of getting to the majors. A lot of people just skip over it. And you're really saying, no, this is what it's like actually doing this, especially as someone that I appreciate like you, who's not just like, oh yeah, I threw 95 in high school, so whatever. Like, you actually needed to put in the work. You needed to develop and change and to really go through it to be like, okay, I have to make sure I take advantage of all of this and get the most out of what I can do to ensure that I keep going forward. And now that you're here with the Orioles, I kind of want to hear about your arsenal as a whole. And the thing that doesn't get discussed enough, I think, at least publicly with us, is your mentality. And that's on two aspects. One, of what you're trying to do with each of your pitches and kind of how you utilize them. But second is what you're thinking about when you throw it. I think about this a ton with when I talked to Zach Gallen about, I was asking him, hey, you have a slider or is it a cutter? Like, which one is it? And this was back in 2019. Now he split them out because whatever. But back then he said, well, it is a slider, but I have to think in my head it's a cutter. Because if I think it's a slider, we're going to do exactly what you're talking about, the ultra supination, getting on the side too much of it. I need to make sure I have a flatter wrist or stiffer wrist, rather, staying on top of it. And I'll naturally have that supination to get what I want on it. And those are the actual adjustments that I hear all the time from veterans about what you do inside of a start. And also for the next one, when you see that the ball is spinning out in this way, or you're not finishing this one, it's not just saying, okay, cool, throw it more inside. It's about, all right, what is it in my delivery that I need to be focusing on? Like for me, backdoor two-seamer, I essentially shoot through a shooto. I would essentially throw like a reverse cutter and putting extra pressure on my index finger and going out as far as I could. I remember like almost as in like a star glistening in my head. The second, like every nerve, every focus is on the tip of my index finger as I try to go out as far as I can to point to the plate, to the glove as I release. Like that's where my entire focus is. And that would make sure that the ball would come back enough to get that like called strike three on a backdoor two-seamer, sinker, I guess now. And that's what I want to hear about your arsenal and what you're trying to do with each one. And I want to start with that four-seamer. Are you thinking of this as a, hey, I want to go upstairs with this. You have a lot of vert on it, 17 inches of vert. We like that, especially considering that you don't throw 98 to get all the extra spin a lot of other guys get and use for it. Is that something that's, you know, versus lefties versus righties, you're saying, cool, just generally upstairs? Or is it inside of righties and also away to lefties as well? What's your game plan with each of these pitches? We'll start with the four-seamer.
Yeah, I mean, four-seam, like you said, really trying to work kind of top of that zone. With the carry, understanding that that's where it plays. And with kind of my pitch mix being, I would say, more of a north-south kind of approach in some ways. I know there's the sweeper and the sinker.
No, you can't have the curveball the way you do if you aren't north-south. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, that working out top is going to help one just with the movement play. That's like the location where it plays, and then it's going to help the curveball play off of it more. I think recently too, we've been looking at a lot more of like, you know, guys, I think especially four-seam guys, like hitters are understanding that like four-seam guys are going to throw it at the top, and kind of opening up a chute to where when you throw it down in the zone, like it stays truer, but it looks like it's going to be a ball and stays in the zone. So gotten ahead a lot by just throwing four seam kind of, I guess, old school approach at the knees.
Oh man, shoot knees.
Yeah. I mean, growing up for me, it was like, obviously we didn't know metrics. We didn't know, hey, throw a four seam at the top of the zone to try and get strike three. So for me in like high school and even when I was younger, it was like, okay, we're going to throw everything at the knees or below. Like if we're going to miss, we're going to miss down in the zone, not up in the zone. So like that was my approach. Obviously it's completely different now, kind of.
And when you're making an adjustment on a four seamer, what are you telling yourself?
I'm just thinking like to feel it out in front, honestly. Yeah. And sometimes I can feel like I'm getting to one side or the other. But really when I feel kind of out in front, feel like everything's just going forward is when I feel like one, I have a little bit more life to it, and two, I can command it a little bit better. Like the Cincinnati start, my four seam command was all over the place. And I think I was really trying to think I needed to think about throwing it in a different location when looking at it. I think it was more like timing thing with my mechanics. So that was just a situation where like I tried to make an adjustment and I was looking at the wrong thing and didn't realize it soon enough. And maybe that's just a little bit of inexperience still trying to learn and figure things out. But yeah, so like that's my four seam.
Just kind of nailing that four seamer a little bit here. I love going out, right? Playing doing the towel drill essentially. And it's what I have noticed is that against left-handers specifically, the plan, I mean, right now, correct me if I'm wrong, generally is four seamers away. You have big sweepers underneath, and then you also have sinkers inside as well. Do you find yourself more comfortable throwing that four seamer away or that sinker inside?
Really, it kind of just depends. I think for lefties, like their kind of area, I would say, or power area is that down and in. Pretty typical for, I would say, majority of left-handed hitters. So kind of working the four seam away and up, it's more so not necessarily like comfortability throwing it there. I mean, I can throw it up and into a lefty if needed to. But just the way I think the four seam plays up in a way to where the two seam, I can kind of work either side and then the sweeper can play off of either two depending on the count.
Right.
Like we can set it up away or start it inside. It's just kind of the way everything works out, I would say.
The reason I mention it is you have had success this year with that four seamer away, and I see that a lot of just, hey, cool, I'm going to stay away from lefties and then have my sweeper underneath. I'm a giant fan of being able to throw sinkers, same-handed batters inside. I think it's someone that threw sinkers growing up, and then I got really into it, and then everyone was doing it, and then sinker pulled back because we realized, oh my gosh, mistake sinkers are like the easiest pitches to hit. So let's not do that. Let's understand how high heaters are still really good. And now it's making this resurgence of that people are realizing, oh, right, horizontal movement coming into the batter is always a good thing when it's in and off the plate. And I see that your sinker, two things about that I really like this season is, one, you're way more consistent getting strikes with it than you are on your four seamer. Right now it's 21% usage at a 77% strike rate. And there are some that have leaked over, but I mean, we have our PLV, which is our by pitch, just overall grade based on the count and the kind of batter and everything. And it calls it one of the better sinkers out there, actually, against lefties. Really? So it's loving it based on the location, how you used it. It's gone. I know you've gotten burned, I think, a couple times with it. The outcomes are not favorable. So the two times it's been in play has been also really good contact for them. But I'm a fan of you going with that instead of the four seamer that has been a little more erratic. And I'm kind of curious if there's a reason or there's a certain game that really caused that four seamer to have such a low strike rate of 53%.
Yeah. I mean, so I would say looking back on the two seam real quick, I would say, is that strictly left-handers? Cause I'm trying to think what the two results would have been.
The two results. Oh, I could probably find that for you in some time, but yeah, keep going here. I'll outline it for you.
Yeah, so the two seam last year was Because I didn't throw one. I threw one when I was younger. Haven't thrown one in the minors. I would joke playing catch sometimes, like last year in AAA, I would joke about throwing it, playing catch. And I swear mm-hmm. when I would throw it in catch play, it was straighter than my fastball. So I was like, yeah, I guess I'm just never going to throw this. Then after I debut, I think I'm sitting there for a couple of weeks and just seeing everybody throw sinkers and to same-handed batters and just have great success with it. I mean, Burns is throwing this cutter, and then when he faces righty, he's just letting the sinker rip.
Yeah.
Bradish kind of has this like cut carry four seam, and then
I want him so badly just to throw that thing more inside and to pull back on its usage, because it can be so easy to hit at times. And I'm like, no, you have like this beautiful nullifier for lefties, just like, please lean into that completely.
But then he's throwing this sinker to righties that, like, if you look at movement wise, like, isn't off the charts, but because of the separation he gets between
right.
his four seam and his two seam, it's just
absolutely
at 98, so it's devastating. So I'm like, let me just try to see what I could do. Let me just throw it in a bullpen, see how it is. And for some reason, when I got off the mound, it was pretty good. And then I think the game against Cleveland was the first time I threw it, and like the first time I really saw it was. I think I was facing Fry, and I think I started him with a cutter up and in that he swung and missed at. Then I threw him a two seam that kind of started middle. And last year, the two seam was kind of, there weren't a lot of expectations on it. I wasn't trying,
right.
I was really just trying to rip it and let it move. Wasn't really too focused on like overly commanding it. But like I let this one rip from Fry, and I looked back and I had 20 inches of horizontal movement, and I was
oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then we threw a slider off that, and it's like I'm throwing east west now all of a sudden. Like it's, they're seeing a pitch they haven't seen. And then it got to the point where we were slowly building the command, I guess, a little bit with the two seam to left. So I started throwing it more to lefties, obviously. It was one of those things where, like, I laugh at the amount of times last year I'd get a lefty 0-2, 1-2, and Rutch would literally set up, like, in the start of the right-hander's batter's box, and it's just, like, two-seam outside, and I would look to throw it there and just let it run back and get kind of a backdoor looking with that. So
nice.
I think when we talk about kind of the sinker usage to lefties, like yesterday – the strike percentage I think is high because I mean the amount of balls that were fouled off or missed yesterday on right. sinkers to lefties were probably not in the zone, like the in zone rate probably wasn't that great, but
that's fine with me. That's actually you know, I would, back in the day when I didn't have all this wonderful stuff, I would just judge sinkers based on O swing.
Yeah.
I would just like, are you getting, you know, are you like Zach Wheeler where you have 50% O swing on sinkers, which is just absurd. But if you're above 30%, that means you're generally doing it the right way with it. And right now, as far as your sinker is to lefties, what I see is a 56% O swing at the moment, which is just incredibly encouraging. I mean, obviously, it's because you are throwing it right on that border of inside edge and then just off of it. It's how you got James Wood to fly out. That was one of the hard hits. And then one was a sack fly to Vinny Pascantino, which was in that nitro zone down and in a little bit. You probably wanted it more either up or
wasn't inside. The best day for me overall.
Yeah.
Limiting contact, but
yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, like throwing that two seam for me to lefties is like, if I'm going to be up with it, make sure it starts kind of more middle and runs it to where it's either inside or even off. And then, like working away with it too has been nice just because it can run back and get some looking strikes, whether that's early or behind. But it causes for like mix. So with the fastballs. So like the two I look back, I guess one I look back on, and then one instance yesterday is like when I was facing Devers in my first start, I think his last at bat, it was, I want to say 2-1. We went four seam, tried to go down and away, barely off. 2-2, tried to go, or 1-2, tried to go down and off. Then 2-2, tried to go down and away with the four seam again, was a little off. So now it's full count. I'm thinking he just saw two four seams in the same spot, both down and away. I'm like, let me just try and throw a two seam in the exact same spot and let it run back over. Looking, it probably started in the exact same spot as those four seams, ran back over. He wasn't swinging at it, and it came back into the zone.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You'd love to see that.
And then, like, yesterday with Grisham, in that last at-bat, we were throwing him a lot of two-seams. We had in his earlier at-bats, too, mostly, like, two-seam slider. I think we tried to mix in a curveball. But then maybe it wasn't Grisham, whoever it was. Four seams, he's a lefty. Four seams, and then – or we were mostly two seams, and then full count, just tried to rip a four seam down and away, and probably imagined it was a two seam and it was going to come back, and it was off the plate a little bit, but luckily he probably thought it was a two seam and was going to come back and got a swing and miss.
Yeah, that we have a strike looking from Grisham at 3-1, and then you have the 3-2 Grisham swinging as well. Yeah, right. And playing with that 100%, I love it. Going between two fastballs and just even getting a ton out of that. Would you say that, I mean, against lefties, it seems pretty obvious to me, at least, that you feel like the outpitch is your sweeper to lefties. I mean, that's just a prototypical thing. Lefties, you got to have that big slider or something just to throw down and away. It's kind of weird how more susceptible they are. But then again, you see guys like Dylan Cease and DeGrom are just like, yeah, I'm just going to throw the slider down and away all the time against righties, and things are amazing too. But yeah, there's always this idea of a little bit more tug.
This, you know, pocket like DeGrom has in this down low.
It's unbelievable. It's just how, oh my gosh. I like to think it's because of his simplicity a little bit. Like, he's very just, everything's compact with him in his mechanics. But when it comes to right-handers, I mean, you're going to face a ton of them. Teams are not shy to throw. Great. We've got all the right-handed bats we want. You're going to have to deal with this. And obviously when it comes to being a slower, I don't want to say, I even feel weird saying slow, because it's like, you throw 92, man. You push it up to 94 and 96 even at times. But as a lefty in the league, it has become a changeup league. It has become a thing as a lefty. It's hard to see sustained success as a lefty unless you throw really hard, or you just have like a Robbie Ray slider, essentially, that you are just completely confident throwing down and into the back foot of right-handers. And something I've been really curious about with your development is you have a curveball that is actually pretty great at times against right-handers. You can plop that in for called strikes. You go underneath bats. We've seen Fried have success with that. We've seen Kershaw have success with that in the past from the left side. Barry Zito, of course, way back in the day. But the changeup to me is always is the one that I feel is the biggest leap you can take moving forward with it. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about how you use that pitch and really what your out pitch is against right-handers at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the changeup has been kind of a developing thing for me. Like when we talked about last year with like the White Sox start, like towards the end of the year, it was weird. It was one of those things where, like, if I threw it in a pocket kind of down and away to a righty, it was phenomenal. But if it was anywhere but that, it was getting hit hard. Like, I think I threw one to Altuve probably 2 inches off the plate, and he somehow still took it the other way. Even in the Minnesota start, I think the two hits I gave up were doubles off the changeup, and it wasn't in a down and away pocket. So it was kind of one of those things, like if it wasn't located exactly where I wanted to, it wasn't getting good results whatsoever. So we went into the off season kind of looking at something that could switch it up a little bit. And that's where I kind of started tweaking with a kick change, which I've gotten interesting movements.
Well, right. So I was going to think that it was a kick change because you added 2 inches of drop to it and completely reduced its lateral movement. I mean, we're talking 6 inches almost of more of kind of looking like a gyro changeup relative to what you had before. And yeah, the kick change, everybody, you know, Sarah said this amazing article talking about the origins of it. I'm sure every person was whispering this in your ear. I don't know if you have a baseball with you close by, but when it comes to a kick change, it's kind of like how I felt with knuckle curves a bit of I could never throw a knuckle curve. It always just bothered me immensely. And I just hated the idea of pulling back my index finger in any way, because like the index finger is everything. That's like everything goes through that. And I don't want to use that. Get out of here. Stop that. And when you're throwing your kick change, are you essentially throwing it like, I mean, this one is obviously not your index finger if you're doing like a circle, but are you doing like a four seamer grip and then pulling back? Are you doing walk us through how you're using yours. Are you flicking out like Hayden Birdsong, or are you just kind of holding it back like Jack Leiter?
Yeah. So there's been, so much different development,
right?
I started throwing it. So originally I was throwing it like trying to throw it this off season. I was, I found a picture of how kind of Birdsong throws his, where it's a big spike and one finger's kind of outside. So it's like two seam oriented. I think his, one finger is outside of the seam and one's inside of the two seams. And, so I was throwing that playing catch and it was honestly like more of like a, it was kind of just fading. So there wasn't like great action to it. Wasn't throwing it off the mound. So, you know, some pitches can have a little bit different shape once you ramp up the intensity and are throwing it off a slope. But that was one of those things where just throwing it, like I could tell it wasn't very good. And, like I would try and throw a short box in this like tunnel at this facility and almost I'd have so many almost just hitting the net on the left side. Cause I'd go to throw it and shoot straight out.
And like kind of like a Joe Kelly breaking a window. Exactly. That video.
But then I switched to both being inside of the two seams. And then I went really deep into my palm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a,
almost
like a, almost like a palm ball, like a traditional one. And the old adage, of course, when it comes to reducing spin and actually, and slowing the ball down and getting more drop in general is the further back into your fingers, the more of the bottom of your finger you get, the slower it's going to be, the more you reduce everything of the ball as it comes out of your fingers. It's why like four seamers, I was always taught that you want just as little of the ball as possible touching your fingers when you release it. And then the more and more you get in. So like the Foch ball that you might have seen, which is, it's pretty much what the splinker is. And I, Cade, I can't tell you enough, like how much of just the, oh, duh, of course it's the same. When I finally saw a splinker, because that's what I used to throw is it's just a splinker to me is you make it a one seam grip. So you put the one seam in between and then you just push it further into your fingers, like halfway down your fingers for it instead of all the way down to the back as you're describing with yours. So that's what the splinker is, everybody. And that's what a Foch ball is too. It's a fun one if you ever want to experiment with that.
That exact grip that you just showed was what I used to throw. I experimented with it in the year before COVID at Nebraska. And, I think the last one I ever threw was because I was throwing like 88 to 90 my sophomore year.
Yeah.
And when I would throw that, it would be like 86. So it was kind of just a hard changeup for me. But it had
good if it had that extra movement and different and off of it, then like sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. And then I threw one to Torkelson at Arizona State and he hit one like 420 feet.
And that was it. You're like, I'm done. Like,
all right. Yeah. I'm not done.
Well, I mean, that's one of the interesting things too, is I forget about this. I mean, sometimes you guys have the right mentality. You have the exact thing. You should be doing this. This is what Jameson Taillon mentioned, where he's throwing these cutters up and in, and it's like really good. And then all of a sudden Brandon Marsh hits one that's just like a perfect cutter as he's just getting into it. He's like, no, I'm not going to do this again. I'm like, Jameson, this is such a good pitch, though. I know Brandon Marsh did that, but you can't do it. And yep, Torque just ruined a pitch. You know, this is why I hate hitters. They should just be cardboard cutouts. You know, unbelievable. But right, so this quick kick change you're throwing, you're getting it deep into your palm now.
Yeah. So, now it's not as much, but still talking about like the evolution of the evolution of it so far. So in the off season, I switched to like really deep in my palm, big spike. Like I had to preset it because there's no way I was like going just neutral grip and then getting it in my glove without tipping it. Right. So I was throwing it, was seeing some, it was, if I threw it in the zone, if it got to the plate, it was really good. But it was one of those things where it's so deep to where sometimes it just doesn't come out and it's going 55 feet. But killing the spin so much on it to where it was like, I think I have a picture of one. I threw it like -7 vert with -12 horizontal, which is insane.
Just as a frame of reference, everyone, when it comes to -7 vert, we're talking about your four seamer at 17 inches of vert, and a lot of changeups off of that, we want like 8 to 10 inches drop of that from there. So we've actually seen from Povich's kick change this year, something around like 4 vert as opposed to like the 6 of last year. And -7 is unreal. I mean, that's an ideal slider, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was throwing some that were almost like a righty curveball in some senses.
Oh, man, that's a screwball is what that technically is. But that's all walk like an Egyptian is what I say is how you're supposed to throw that. Is you have to go reverse curve, essentially, the normal way. But, yeah, that's an ultra pronation then to get that going.
Yeah, well, so it's weird because, like, a lot of the – most of the kick change, like, variations are kind of like supinated oriented. So it's to allow it to kick it a little bit more so that it gets it spinning more on the side to drop down for.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Okay.
So when I was getting it really deep though, it was less like kick change and more just like spike change to where looking at the edgertronic of it, it was like my middle finger was almost pushing like a knuckleball.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you are doing the flick.
Yeah, and then it was just catching here and then spinning, like, if I was almost sidearm and really, like, Devin Williams trying to roll it over and whatnot. But, yeah, the command on – like, I was getting sick movement if I was putting a pitch in a vacuum and was like, I don't care if this is a strike or not.
Just looking right, right.
Itself. Fantastic. But I would maybe throw, like, one for every 12 for a strike or something like that.
Yeah, like, and that's unfortunate, right?
So then I switched to – I started playing with, like, okay, I think kind of this grip is what I'm looking for, but maybe not as deep. So I started playing with, like, how deep I add it. Started getting more of, like, the supinated seam effect to it to where – I was getting it to closer to zero. It would be more like I'd throw one maybe in it, like a -1 or -2, but for the most part between like 0 and 4 ish.
Right.
And it was also like last year, my changeup towards the end of the year was getting increasingly closer to 90 miles per hour. I don't know what was going on, but I just, for some reason, started throwing it harder and harder to where it was more just like a slowed down sinker, which didn't really help. But now throwing this, I don't, whether it's the kick or whatever it is, has slowed it down a bit too. So there's more of a velo adjustment, which I think has helped a lot. But throwing it like that, so then going to more looser in the hand, I was seeing a lot better command with it. I was able to throw it in the zone a lot more. I was able to kind of throw it down if I was 2 strikes and needed like a swing and miss or straight contact. But the movement consistency wasn't necessarily there. I remember throwing it in Dunedin in spring training. I think I threw a really good one to Bichette Like he was first batter of my start. I threw a fastball, whatever the sequence was, threw a really good one to him that he started to swing at and couldn't hold back, and it just dropped off. And then later in that at bat, I tried to throw another one, and it was like he swung and missed at it. Thankfully, it was like 22-5, so it was an extreme carry cutter out of nowhere.
Yeah, right.
So it there will be one of those every now and then,
yeah,
where it just doesn't catch right. So that was me being up on the two seam, and this last week, just because like the inconsistency with the movement, I mean, it's hard as far as strike throwing. It's obviously gotten a lot of swing and miss. Like if we talk about swing and miss pitch so far, I think it's really been my changeup to righties when it's moving right. But having the confidence to throw it is a big thing, and not knowing if, okay, I'm going to start this middle and let it finish down away.
Yeah.
But then it carry and come up and over the middle of the plate.
What is most interesting, I think, about it this year? I mean, this is me just saying the broad label of stuff, and it's why it's so great being able to talk to you about it. Is as a whole, it's a sub 50% strike rate, which you never want to see, with a 15-16% swing strike rate. This is all against lefties, the changeup this year. And when you look at the locations of it, it's actually a little interesting. Like I would think agree that when you talk about the pocket of where you want this thing to land, is essentially half of it is kind of in that bottom quadrant, down and away, and the rest of it is just a diagonal off of it, right? Mm-hmm. And looking at the strike zone plot this year, I'm seeing everything around that box. Like that is away. If it's away and off the plate, it's above that, so it's thigh high or up, so middle lock or a high lock location. And then if it's down enough, it's then middle or inside to righties. So the angle, and what I really get from that is actually a lot of what you're talking about, of like, I'm either getting this cut or I'm getting too much over here.
Yeah.
And both of those things are hurting it, where it's not, you're not really following the angle that you want coming down this way. It's more of up here and not there, if that makes sense, right? It's almost like the initial starting point needs to come down, and then the entire diagonal will follow with it.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. This last week, so I had said I it was more of like that two seam grip. So I kind of went back to my one from last year, the grip. So instead of it being on the two seam, if you like pull it down to where like it's under the horseshoe, or going over the horseshoe, not exactly like going across the two seams, like going whatever they call it, like over the rails.
Down the tracks or across the tracks.
Yeah, it's so it's that, but it's up a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And then I still do the spike a little bit. So like my thought process the last week was like, okay, I keep getting like this weird movement on it. It's not necessarily consistent. It still feels a little weird, like gripping this like a two seam. Let me try and pull it down, kind of go to last year's grip, but maybe spike it. Maybe that'll still help with the movement. In my bullpen, it was great. Like I had one that was 1-18. Fantastic. And so I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to go with this. It feels natural to me. I feel like I can command it and throw it. Like for me specifically, like change up, like I want it down and away, but like with how it's moving, as long as it's down, I'm great with it.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to actually show this to you really quickly. If I can do it, I think I can. Yeah. Look at that. This is the change up movement. It's almost, let me see if I can manipulate this a little. There we go. We can see the, you know, against right-handers, you have it away too much or down inside. As far as also movement, you're actually, everything that you describe, this is all via the YouTube, by the way, guys, if you're listening right now, you definitely have to watch this on YouTube. You can see the different, I mean, there's so much change, and you can see this experimentation you're talking about. Obviously, I think we would all agree, we want this one. We want the that negative vert changeup. Oh my gosh, that'd be insane. And yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is we're all really looking forward to that coming together. Do everything you need to do. We don't care what the results are. Okay, I know you do. We don't. We just want you to get to that consistently as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did that throughout the week, and then yesterday playing catch with it before, and I don't advise like switching stuff during a game or before.
Oh yeah. No, no.
But I was throwing it like I did in my pen, and I was watching it, and I'm like, this thing is straight. This is just not going to work. Mm-hmm. Threw a couple in the bullpen as well, and I was like, yeah, I got to revert. I got to revert back to going to the two-seam. I think I threw one to Goldschmidt his first at-bat, and then I threw another to somebody else, and I think the movement on both of those was somewhere between, like, 11 vert and, like, negative 4 horizontal. I'm like, this is just a crappy cutter.
We see those scattered ones up there in that plot that I just showed. Yeah.
So it was two of those, and luckily, like I said, what's definitely helped with it so far this year, even with bad locations, just the velo kill on it. Mm-hmm. So they were both pulled foul. So I'm like, okay, I can't. I'm going back to this. I'm sliding it back down. I'm doing what I did earlier in the week, and then I think ended up throwing a few more that game, and maybe got a swing and miss, got a couple looking and some weak contact on it. So, I mean, the development of it has just been crazy because I've gotten anywhere from that 20-something vert, like cut, carry, slow fastball type deals, almost kind of like the Zach Gallen cutter changeup that he threw.
Yeah, right.
I threw one to Jonathan India in KC that was – like 86, and it was -2 and -18 or something like that. So it's definitely one of those pitches that there's like, if it doesn't catch right, it's going to do something completely different than you're intending.
Yeah, exactly. And just want to let you know, my colleague Alex Fast calls you the Slim Reaper, just so you know. But I do also want to go back to the initial question, which was your out pitch against righties. Would you say it's the curve, the you want to be the changeup? Is that four seamer?
Yeah, I mean, I want it to be, I guess, the changeup. I would say it is when it's working right, like when I throw it in the down location that I want and it does what I'm expecting it to, mm-hmm. then it gets the swing and miss. But like we were talking about, sometimes it decides to hop up on me and stay in the zone. I think the curveball being kind of one of my better pitches. I know sometimes metrically it doesn't always say it's that great.
Curves are hard to get metrically right because generally what we see is either you're going to throw it as an early called strike pitch, you know, just get that what I call free real estate of just you're going to get a strike most of the time. If you can just get this over the plate, they won't swing at it. And then later in the counts, it can be difficult to get whiffs on it. Just in general, curves are either not chased as much as, say, sliders or changeups.
Yep.
And it can be difficult to get that right because if guys are looking off speed and then they see a curveball that's a lollipop in the middle of the plate, then bam, there you go. You're going to get hit on that. Yours, though, I will say, you've heard this, I'm sure. Easy comparisons would be Max Fried of the approach that you have and everything that you do with it. I love it. I think it's really fun. It's great. Do you feel comfortable in that two strike count throwing that underneath the zone to a righty?
Yeah. And that's been like the biggest thing with it so far this year is just like when it hasn't been great has just been leaving it too much in the zone, especially 0-2, 1-2. But
yeah,
like if you look back and see the swing and misses, like I think in Washington, Cruz and Bell, it's kind of almost like a slider mindset with it to where I'm throwing it to a back foot. Cause obviously it's not straight, like up and down. There's some horizontal on it. So it's,
no, but that's why we like it. It has that two plane movement. We dig so it.
When it goes more like where it's more of that middle start, and finishes almost kind of like a back foot curveball in a sense to yeah. right. That's when I really see the swing and miss on it. So like when I'm shooting four seams at the top and then like working the curveball off of it on that same line, that's when I see the swing and miss. When I see more contacty with two strikes, it's more either I'm leaving it over the middle of the plate and they're catching it and just seeing it and able to try and get a bat on it. Mm-hmm. Or it's more starting away so they can kind of see the line earlier. And it's not finishing under their hands, under the barrel. They're kind of able to reach out. So I've still gotten plenty of weak contact on it. But I think like that kind of back foot approach is where I've really seen like the swing and miss success.
Yeah. What's interesting is that you can see, I mean, I love this about strike zone plots too, is that you can kind of see actually your visualization for it. That is where you're starting and how everything goes off of it. Cause you just see the diagonal line.
Yep.
And kind of like it is with the changeup. I used to throw a backdoor curve all the time. It was my best pitch against lefties. I've seen a ton of guys have success with curveballs and opposite-handed batters. And sometimes it is this, the back foot. But generally what I see is you're trying to actually go for, and this is how I did it, was you try and go for the called strike down in a way. You want it to land there. And everything kind of goes off of that one. So kind of like with the changeup, what I normally see is yours is starting around, you know, up and away, and then going down that diagonal. Down maybe like middle away and taking that and trying to pull it down 2 inches or, you know, lower. So that starts at the bottom of the zone as the first one, then going down so that when the curveball is released, it's starting up and middle away off the plate. Let's just say up and away, coming down through the zone at that bottom down and away quadrant, and then ending kind of middle down because the safety of that, the reason like I've seen people do that before is if you miss, it's not middle. It's not in the nitro zone, even if you miss down and in the zone. Obviously, guys that are beat can still just drop the bat and be like, I'm not going to use my force anymore. I'm just going to drop and I can probably make contact with this. And it can be also less terrifying to throw as a pitcher. Like it's such a small margin if you're down and in, you know, it's like, oh God, I don't want to hit them. I don't want it to be in this nitro zone. While that approach of the back foot or the down and away glove and then also going underneath it, you will still get a fair number of whiffs because mm-hmm. it will go through the zone.
Yeah.
While you also get a cold strike in a spot that you want. And I can't not mention the similarity of that, like with the changeup and the curve. And I'm wondering if you have experimented with the starting points for each of these pitches and just kind of trying to stay low as much as you can with them or just really that down and away spot.
Yeah, the biggest, like, if we look at last year, like, talking about, I said I look back on those last two starts, and then really, mm-hmm. like, kind of the whole last month for me, the biggest mindset was, like, I'm going to rip a four-seam. Like, I know just ripping a four-seam, I know more than likely it's going to finish at the top of the zone. But then, like, the emphasis back to being, like, my off speed, I'm going to throw it knees or below. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I think it's easy to try and what's happened, I think a little bit for me is like easy to try and think, I'm just going to rip this and throw it for a strike or two strikes, try and rip it for a strike to ball. And, I just really need to get back to that mentality of like rip the four seam, let it carry. And, just focus knees and below on everything else.
And the last one I do want to mention, because by the way, I got to say, Cade, I know I initially said like, oh, 20, 30 minutes, whatever, but this has been so much fun and really hearing you really dive into it. I don't think anyone's actually giving me that proper journey that you have. It's a fantastic one too. I'm really happy you shared it with from high school to the majors. But this has been too much fun for me. I don't want to take all of your time because this is incredible. But last question I do really want to have here is just the cutter, because that cutter last year I thought was a really good weapon for you. It had a high strike rate for you. Yes, it had some mistakes on it to righties, but what we typically do see for left-handers is that cutter showing up as a way to prevent batters from cheating too much away on any changeups or off speed slow? And also, when you're not throwing 95, 96, even though the four seamer can get whiffs upstairs, having that extra bit of hesitation that, yes, this is hard, but it's not that four seamer, can work wonders. And I'm kind of curious why this year we've seen it just completely get shelved against right-handers and just in general.
Yeah, so it's very tough for me. Last year, we kind of, the reason I like went away from it was, one, because it felt like I would try and I wasn't really putting an emphasis on trying to get it inside to righties. Like we would say inside, but I think I was like more focused on, okay, I need to start it here to try and get it inside, but I need it to stay a strike. And that would cause it me to sometimes leave it arm side and it would just run back. Kind of like if you think about like trying to throw a two seam into a righty, and you know, like a front door two seam to a righty, especially throwing four seams in, is a very beneficial pitch. But if you start it inside and it runs back through the
middle, completely. It is a lot of damage, a dangerous pitch. There's only like a handful of guys, and you know, Michael King and even JT Ginn are like, hey, I can throw fun hip sinkers, no problem. It's fine. It's like, what? You can't do that. It's insane.
So it's like one of those things where I wasn't putting enough emphasis on inside to righties. Mm-hmm. So when I would leave it kind of arm side, it would just come back over the middle of the plate and it was getting pounded. It was good. Like it was a good reset pitch for me. Like if my command was out of whack, it was like one of those pitches I felt like I could come back over the zone with it for a strike. But then I got sent down and I looked at kind of like what pitches were working, what weren't. And my cutter was one that was getting the most damage on it at the time in the big leagues. And so we're like, okay, we're going to scratch that. And it's the reason why I say it's like so difficult for me right now is because it seemed like once I scratched that, like my command got a lot better, which was kind of the focus on scratching a pitch really was like, okay, my command's kind of right now. Let's dial it back. Let's not throw six pitches. Let's dial it back and just focus on filling up the zone early and attacking and throwing strikes.
Makes sense, yeah.
So we did that. And like the thing I go back, because I've thought about like throwing it again. Like I've thrown it and playing catch, joking around. It's still good. But it's like whether it be because I stopped throwing the cutter, or it just happens to be like the timing of it. Like I got used to throwing major league balls, or I found something that works for me. It was like my command went up at the time. Like my velocity went up, which like after a couple of starts, it started to go up. But that can also be like time of the year, just feeling consistency, because like right now it's back to I would say what it was when I was throwing the cutter. So whether that actually correlates or not, but my vert was up on my four seam, and then like I just saw better results, I guess, overall.
Yeah, no, there's no reason to just like go with it. I totally understand.
So it's like one of those things, like I don't, is it because I stopped throwing the cutter, or is it because just like the time, it was just the timing of it.
And you were saying that you try to throw Marianos.
Yeah. So it's pretty much like a force. I flip it. So it's not.
Right. So the other side. So you're essentially falling off a little bit.
So as you throw. When I throw my four seam, I go like horseshoe out. When I throw my cutter, I go like horseshoe in, just so it's a little different, and I rotate it a little bit.
Yep.
And then just think, like, I literally probably only use my middle finger. Like, I put complete pressure on that and just throw it like a fastball. That's why I'm able to throw it close to my fastball velocity.
Gotcha.
But yeah, like it's tough because it's.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's one of those pitches that when it goes away, you're like, okay, I don't want to focus so much on this. it's something that you throw, like you could do, I don't know, two outs in the third inning, 0-0 to a righty. Just be like, all right, let's just see if I have this.
Yeah.
You know, you throw one of them there and you go, fine, don't like it. Let's just not do that today or whatever and move on. And like you can experiment at these moments where it's like the low risk moment to try it. But what is interesting is that you're mentioning your mentality with it. And it doesn't sound like it's started kind of middle in and hope for it to go edge of the plate and inside from there. It sounds like more of just outside as a backdoor offering.
I mean, we would sometimes try and go backdoor as like that being the emphasis. For the most part, though, like if I was throwing it to a righty, it was to get inside.
Yeah.
And sometimes I would just leave it out over the plate.
Yeah, fair enough.
Me trying to, I guess, focus more on trying to be in the zone rather than, my sinker mentality to lefties is like, I'm going to let it rip. And if it comes inside, like, they're probably.
I want it inside. Let it live there.
So it's
that's where it should be. That's where it should be, inside and like not even on the plate, because guys will swing at that every time because they think it's just a four seamer and they'll just, cool, this is easy baseball.
Yeah. And they're like, I always continue to think about it and go back to it on like, oh, maybe I could bring it back. And maybe it was just more, the reason the damage was there was just because the usage on it was so high. And maybe if we like lower the usage to where it's a very low usage pitch, but it makes its appearance in certain situations. Like, I got so many strikeouts, honestly, in like AAA, just because I would be throwing a four seam and a cutter kind of in the up to up and in locations to righties, to where it's like they're seeing
two fastballs in the zone and they don't know which one's which.
Yeah. So it's like I'm throwing a four seam up and in that is hopping above the zone that they're swinging under or they're taking. And then I'm throwing a cutter that's starting in the same spot and they're swinging at it thinking it's the four seam. And then it runs up over their hands. And obviously I grew up watching Kershaw. It was like, sometimes I would miss down with it and it'd be almost like a Kershaw, I guess, crochet type cutter to where it's like 90 mile per hour cutter to the back foot that are getting under the barrel. So it's one of those things like I think about a lot too, because I think it also elevates my four seam a lot. And my changeup, like in AAA last year at the beginning of the year, is like, okay, if I'm working primarily like four seam cutter changeup, and I know I'm going to have a good day because I'm going to attack with those and get ahead easily. Because the timing and then the movement on them, they're going to be all over the place. And I'm just going to throw on a curveball and they're going to be all out of whack. And
yeah, completely. Like, what? You're not supposed to throw this. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm going to bang the table saying, hey, you throw sinkers inside, make sure they're inside of lefties. You throw cutters, make sure they're inside of righties, and miss inside. If you're going to miss it inside. Right. Keep those four seamers doing what you do with them. Make sure the mentality of the curve and change are down as opposed to too far east-west, because you're really good at north-south. And I feel like, oh, man, if you just – like, I know this is easy for me to say. Have bad starts. I don't care. Like, have those bad games. Every – you know, they're not going to be perfect right now. It's an interesting situation, I think, and with your squad, because – you guys have such a good team, and also you're figuring out like, how do we get through this season with the damage to the rotation that you guys have had? And it's a place where, you know, it's easy for me to say, cool, invest in like a start or two. But then I'm like, Cade, you don't want to get sent down. You got to make sure that you're okay and everything like that. And I'm like, I get it completely. And I hope that you're able to have some of these conversations. It's like, look, I need like one or two with this. I'm going and just with your catcher, be like, every so often, let's try and take advantage of a moment where I can at least experiment with this one or that one inside of a start. This is just the luxury I get out here, is being like, oh, okay, yeah, if he just invests his one, two starts, he's going to do this. It's going to be great. It's fine. I truly do believe in that cutter approach, especially as a lefty, and you're trying to figure out a way that they don't go after that four seamer as much. Aaron Judge said this, and it sticks with me forever. The hardest thing to do as a hitter, as he says, is when a guy has two fastballs that are with different movement inside the zone.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to do with it.
Like, even thinking about, like, last year, I was to lefties with the cutter, I was throwing three. I think that's why I look back on, like, one of the Juan Soto strikeouts was, like, I'm throwing, starting him, like, with a four-seam away, then I'm bringing a two-seam that starts kind of off to back over to get a strike, and then I'm throwing a four-seam up top or something like that, and then sweeping one off the plate, and then, like, moving it over a little bit to then throwing a cutter that, like, looks like maybe it would sweep off the plate, or maybe a fastball that's just down and away, but it ends up off the plate to where he can't get to it. There's a lot of versatility on throwing it, like, glove side, especially to lefties and righties.
Yeah,
but
we'll see. It's part of the whole thing, right? That's why we call this the craft here. It's all a work in progress. You can always be better. Every single pitch. It's so wild seeing guys like Verlander just change. I'm like, what? DeGrom now going, yeah, right, I'm going to throw more changeups now. I'm like, dude, you're what? Okay. This has been such a pleasure, Kate. I can't thank you enough for taking so much time. My gosh. I can't believe how long it's been. It just flew by. We wish you the best here, of course. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. The very last thing we always ask everybody, I promise is the last question, is what is the most memorable pitch that you have thrown?
Most memorable pitch? I don't know. That's a good one. I might have to think. Probably, I mean, like, last year's at the time, striking out Juan Soto was really cool.
What was it?
It was a cutter down away. And I don't know if it was. It might have been Alex Fast that tweeted it, but someone had tweeted it. It was my second time facing him. So, like, the first time I faced him in New York was just crazy stat line. I don't even want to think about it, but I only gave up one run, so it's okay. But then when they were here, I think that at bat, I had him strike out. I think I saw him tweet about how I had made him swing and miss five times in his first two or three at bats that game. And
oh, man.
Swung and missed five times in a game all season. So that was, I mean, being like one of my first, eight starts or something like that, seeing that for a guy like that was really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh, I love it. Kate Poach, thanks so much for being here. To everybody listening, thanks so much for sticking around. I mean, obviously, you can watch this on YouTube as well, so you can really see all the media that we've shown during it. But thanks so much to Cade, and my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.